This podcast is brought to you by Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
G'day folks, Jack Jones here. You are listening to Gavin Wood's podcast.
Erwin Thomas, born Erwin Thomas Whitridge on the 6th of January 1971, is an American-born Australian singer-songwriter and guitarist. He performs professionally using the stage name Jack Jones from when he was the lead vocalist and guitarist in one of Australia's finest bands, Southern Sons. And in 2002, he released his solo album, The Evolution of Erwin Thomas. And it's great to have him on my podcast. Welcome, Erwin, or Jack. Tell me, which one are you today?
Can I just say, it's a privilege and an honour to be chatting with you for a start. I know we haven't spent a lot of time together in, like, real life, but you are an Australian icon, and that voice of yours is firmly imprinted on my DNA. And it's so lovely to be chatting with you today. It really is. To just, you were a part of the soundtrack of my existence growing up.
I really appreciate it.
And I'm so rapt to be chatting with you, buddy. I really am.
Well, that's very kind of you, Jack. I really appreciate that. I, too, am rapt to be chatting with one of Australia's finest, well, one of America's finest, too. Your story is amazing. When I started to delve into your past, and I found out that you were born in Manhattan in New York.
Yeah, that's right.
You were named after your father, and then his stage name was Jack Good, so that's where the Jack came from.
Yeah, my father was actor, dancer, performer. He did. He was quite a bit older than my mother.
Yeah, I got that.
He was in some movies with Fred Astaire and worked on Broadway with Ethel Merman, Hello Dolly, and he was quite a character.
And he did dance routines for Shirley Temple.
That's correct, he did. Wow, you really did go deep.
And worked on 3 Frank Sinatra television specials. I mean, the guy was just amazing, your father.
Yeah, I know. It's incredible.
And he died so young, what, 63 or something?
63, yeah, that's right. And so I never really, it's funny, I used to spend, when my godfather was alive, he was my father's best friend. And they met during the war. And whenever I'd spend time with him as a teenager, Carmen would just, there would be moments in our conversations where he would just pull out a hanky and just wipe his eyes, and he'd just weep. And I'd say, what's wrong? And he'd say, you just remind me so much of your father. And I think often just how extraordinary that double helix is.
Yeah.
and how so much of us is imprinted on us that we don't even know. I mean, I couldn't have learnt any of those mannerisms from my father when he passed away.
You were 6 months old, weren't you?
That's right. I always find that quite extraordinary, you know.
Now, Jack came down to Australia touring with Hello Dolly and plucked one of our fine Australian folk singers. He cut one out of the pack, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. My mother was a dancer. They met during Sweet Charity, and the rest was history, basically.
Rinalda Green.
That's her.
Well, when you think about it, she was a pioneer back then. You know, the big American comes into town and all of a sudden, hey, honey, come back to Manhattan with me. That must have been a huge step for her.
Yeah, and that was like her first love too. So my mum was pretty green by name, green by nature. Yeah. She was fairly young and innocent and naive, and she just fell madly in love with this guy, and he was very charismatic, and they wrote letters to each other for a year, and then a year later she got an airline ticket in the mail. I mean, it's stuff that, I don't know, fairy tales are kind of made up, really.
Now, you're only 6 months old, of course, when your dad died, but what a guy. Polish comedian, Broadway performer, choreographer, and also a pretty handy golfer, too.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not that great on the golf course, but I can hit the ball, and apparently that's the hardest thing. I can't make it go where it's supposed to, but I can hit it.
Yeah, well, long as you can hit it, you're halfway there.
Yeah, apparently.
So it's in your DNA. You were born to be on stage. Now, tell me about the journey growing up in Manhattan. I think you were about 9 before you and your mum came to Australia.
I was born in New York City, but I grew up, I spent the first 10 years of my life in a place called Frenchtown, New Jersey, and the last sort of year before we came to Australia, a year and a half before we came to Australia, in Owenna, Pennsylvania, which is just on the other side of the Delaware River. So Frenchtown was a fairly, when I was growing up there, it was full of farms, and there was also a fairly high percentage of like actors and writers and composers and almost equidistant to Philly and New York. Yeah. So it was a place that a lot of people, a lot of creatives used to, you know, like to live if they weren't living in the city. You know, of course, my mother left her family to go to America and, you know, she stuck it out for a decade. And then I think she realized, you know, doing a decade without my father.
Tough.
Yeah. And even though she had friends and a fairly strong network of, you know, support network there, I think she did what most people do, and that's, you know, yearn to be with your family. And also, I guess she wanted me to grow up with my cousins and, you know, spend time with my grandparents and aunties and uncles and all that sort of stuff, you know.
Yeah, now I'm thinking of a very young Irwin Thomas at the age of 9 coming into Traralgon trying to make new friends with an American accent. How did that go for you?
Yeah, that was tough. Kids just can be hard on each other at the best of times. It definitely was a bit of a challenge. However, I think it kind of worked to my advantage as well. I mean, I started taking guitar lessons when I was about 11. Mm. Like, and by the time I was 14, I was playing in a bunch of different bands, and I was, you know, I had a bunch of things kind of going on musically. Mm. That tough, awkward period may have been more crushing to me had I not had that. You know, I was into sports when I was in America. I played baseball like all little Yankee kids do, I guess. Yeah. But when I came to Australia, I really was kind of, I didn't assimilate very well to Aussie rules. But, you know, I did have music, and that was something that really, the rest is history, basically.
Well, music breaks down all barriers, and I'm sure, you know, you playing guitar at school, you would have been a pretty hip and cool guy. Plus, it was in your DNA, so you were streets ahead of anyone else in Traralgon.
Well, I guess there was a couple of school concerts that, you know, I learned very early in the piece that you can be unlikable one minute and likable the next minute just by one little thing. And I thought that was a valuable lesson too. Yeah. Because, you know, when you're young and you're 14, you get the crush on the 16-year-old girl, and she wants the 18-year-old guy who's got a car, you know, like, and you're just like invisible to that person. Not to say that, you know, I mean, I'm not having a go at the ladies here, but, you know, all of a sudden you're playing at some gala restaurant in Maui, <Yeah. laughs> and that girl's there, you know, with her family for some, you know, event, and all of a sudden,
you're cool.
Like, you're cool. And it's. I just found that extraordinary. Again, a very valuable lesson to learn to prepare me for what I didn't know was coming later as well.
Turbin Brothers believe every life is unique. Every funeral should be too. Visit turbinbrothers.com.au.
G'day, folks. Jack Jones here. You are listening to Gavin Wood's podcast.
I'm speaking with Irwin Thomas, a.k.a. Jack Jones, Southern Sons, and they're touring. Go and see them because it's a great show, one of our finest Australian bands, Southern Sons. Now, who were your early influences when you were going through the maze of the cover band situation?
When I was learning guitar, I had a very, very broad palette of music. And even before that, like, which I've realised later, has had a very profound impact on me. I found a box of 8-tracks, 8-track cassettes the other day. There's John Denver, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Neil Diamond, Jim Croce, Elton John, Joni Mitchell. So I didn't realize, I think, Simon & Garfunkel, all that music was like the, obviously, there's a lot of Joan Collins, Joan Baez, Janice Ian, like all those people.
Well, you're like your mother there. She was a folk singer, and you just named 5 folk singers.
Right, and that's what I realised was that was phase one of my introduction to music. Right. And then as I was studying guitar, it was like Wes Montgomery, Larry Carlton, Pat Metheny. Nice. You know, like went into this kind of, obviously, I like, you know, the Yellow Jackets and Robin. Lee Ritenour, Robin Ford, Earl Klug, you know, Bill Withers, Al Jarreau, like that was the sort of you know, Steely Dan, Donald Fagen, that era. Yeah. And ironically, my old record collection as a kid was like Styx, Buddy Holly, yeah, Kiss, very eclectic music. But I missed out on the Beatles and Hendrix, and those acts came for me much later. And I think the way that I justify it really is that it was only when I really decided that I wanted to be a songwriter, a singer-songwriter, that I started discovering how, and an engineer or producer, that was when I started going, oh, I get how incredible these acts were, you know.
Yeah. So what was the first song you ever wrote?
I co-wrote some songs on the second Southern Sons record, mm-hmm, with Phil. Shelter, Can't Wait Any Longer, I think, and there's another song on that record that it escapes me at the moment. And I think that was my first real introduction to songwriting, and what a great introduction to have, you know, writing with one of the great songwriters of our time. I believe Phil is one of our great songwriters, I really do. And I guess, you know, that's the James, there's a James Taylor, Joni Mitchell element to his songwriting that I always really have always been in awe of and appreciated. So I think those songs were the songs that I would probably say that was my real first crack at having a go at writing songs. And then the third Southern Sons record, I had quite a few co-writes on that. And then The Evolution of Erwin Thomas was probably my writing with Rusty was a big, that had a big impact on me. And so I think it's just evolved. Before The Evolution of Erwin Thomas, I'd never had a home studio, anything, like even a little four-track. I'd never had anything like that. And the boys in the band would always encourage me, like Phil and Reggie in particular would always say, man, you've got to get a studio, dude. You've got to get a little home studio so you can write songs and put your ideas down. And and I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to buy another amplifier, or I'm going to buy another guitar, or because I was still just down that road. And funnily enough, now that we're going back on the road with the Sons again, I'm literally on my way to my Guitar Tech's place right now to put another guitar rig together just for this tour, because I'm still obsessed with it. But you know, as a songwriter, those things, I didn't really bloom till much later. Yeah. I wished that I'd spent more time connecting with reading. Like I didn't hate reading as a kid, but I didn't discover the love of it till much later. Mm. And I often wonder how that would have changed the trajectory of mine, even just how I received language, as you know, if I'd connected with that earlier.
Mm. So are you the Elton John or the Bernie Taupin? How do you write a song? Do you get the lyrics first or the music first? What happens?
Me, it's usually, so I've just had this wonderful experience. Well, during the sort of our little COVID, our little 2 weeks to flatten the curve era, that was fun. Reggie and I mean, I won't go into the whole detail of that, but basically I bought a place out in the country and I was just about to move into it. And 2 weeks before I moved in, we went into our first lockdown and the place was completely unrenovated, barely livable, to be honest with you.
It's an old church, isn't it?
It's an old church. I've just completed it. But Reggie said to me, I'll come out for a couple of weekends. We'll knock some walls up. We'll get the place livable for you. He goes, and just send me one idea a week. Could be a lyric, could be a musical idea. It doesn't even have to be complete. For the next 18 months, Reggie and I wrote like 36 songs together. Mainly for me, it's the musical idea, the melody, and I'll just mouth sounds as I'm kind of writing composing the song and putting it together. Sometimes fragments of lyrics will come through the ether, but generally it comes to me music first. And then I would send these ideas to Reggie. An hour later, there'd just be a little note. And that note would be a lyric. And I'd just read it and go, wow.
He's your Bernie Taupin.
He really is. There's a new song that we wrote called Gold. Actually, I originally tried to write that song when Paul Gray passed away. I was absolutely heartbroken when we lost him. He was really one of the good guys. And I always felt so honored to be around him, and we had such a beautiful friendship. And
he was music director on Countdown the Arena Spectacular when we toured the country three times with that.
Oh, that's right. He was. He was just such an absolute sweetheart of a human, a musical beast.
Yes, he was.
You know, and as a singer, songwriter, performer, you know, we all know how great. I remember seeing those guys at the Astrodome.
Yeah.
In Terrell, way back in the day.
They were the funkiest dudes in Australia, weren't they?
Oh, my God. I absolutely loved that band. I've still got the 12-inch remixes of I Can Make You Love Me and Sugar Free. Yeah. Oh, God. Awesome. So, you know, I tried to write this song because I was singing at his funeral.
Oh, that would have been tough.
It was horrible. I ended up doing Blackbird there, but I was desperately trying to write this song, and I sent it to Reg, and like I said earlier, like within an hour this lyric had come through, and I just thought to myself, man, this guy, this dear friend of mine who's just been there all along, but I guess, you know, we both had to go through what we've been through to come back to. It sounds a bit sort of romantic, but, you know, like, just, I guess on a songwriting level, it's just such a beautiful collaboration, and I feel so fortunate for us to be able to write music together, because it's, he really does complete me. It's just, as a...
Well, that's good. I mean, that's a great writing force, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Like, it also creates a momentum that is very hard to maintain when you're just trying to push through.
When you get the songwriter block, you need someone else to come in and unlock it, don't you?
100%. And that's such a, you know, I feel very, very, very fortunate that we've reconnected on this one.
Now, mate, you're back, John Farnham, on his hit Chain Reaction tour. Lots of cred there. That would have been a blast. I mean, that really kind of set you up for Southern Suns, really.
That was one of the most magical times in my life.
You toured overseas too, didn't you?
We did a little European jaunt with John. Talk about, you know, going to school, listening to that guy sing every night and just watching him was an absolute education, encyclopedia of lessons.
How to sing 10 notes on one note.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's true too. You know, there are so many wonderful, like, beautiful colours to that man's voice.
Yeah.
Look, it just comes down to taste when you sing that well. Like, it just comes down to, I consider John to be one of the absolute greatest singers of all time, hands down.
He found himself. That's basically what it was. He was singing, you know, as a young man. He was only 17. He was singing for the record companies and management and everything like that. And then when he got away from that, he found himself and said, no, this is me. This is how I sing. And I'm not deviating. That's what I'm going to do. And God love him. And he took on the world.
Yeah, I absolutely adore John. We reconnected at Glenn's Memorial.
Oh, yes.
Initially, I was going to sing Hold Me In Your Arms, and then I got a phone call and the morning of, and anyway, the end of that conversation was that I ended up doing Angels. Even though I'd played that with John, I'd never sung it before, and I learnt it on the way in the car. But singing in front of John in that capacity was just something that I felt so free of, this sort of horrible monkey that's been on my back because of how incredible I consider John to be. So to be compared to John was always, I hated it. Not because it wasn't an honor, but because I was being compared to such greatness.
Yeah.
I just found it incredibly overwhelming and very difficult to kind of just be with. Be in that comparison.
Yeah.
And I think just, you know, in the last maybe 20 years, I've found my voice, and I feel like it was just, anyway, we had an amazing chat that night. There was lots of hugs, lots of tears, and I just apologized. I actually apologized to him. I said, man, I don't know. I was so young. I said, I may have done interviews where I said things like, you know, I don't want to be compared to John Farnham or whatever. I said, no, I just want you to know that you're the greatest.
Yeah,
like, good. And I just want you to know that I have never, ever seen you as anything but that. And my desire to not be compared to you isn't because I didn't think you were cool or any of those things. You're the coolest guy that I know. Like, but it was just such a huge pressure being compared to, I said, and I get it. You don't know what that's like to be compared to God. You are God. You wouldn't know. You wouldn't know. You know, John's support for the Suns, taking us out on the road with him, being such a champion for us, you know, he really, I wouldn't underestimate the impact that, you know, he had on us at radio. And I mean, just by his endorsement, you know. So he was very kind and very generous to us, and I will always be forever grateful to him for that.
Any song can be played at a funeral. What would you like? Visit TobinBrothers.com.au.
G'day, folks. Jack Jones here. You are listening to Gavin Wood's podcast.
I'm speaking with Irwin Thomas, a.k.a. Jack Jones, Southern Sons. Now, you were lucky Phil Buckle wasn't cutting it in the singing department. What depth in the early stages of Southern Sons? Phil Buckle, one of the best drummers in the world, Virgil Donati, Peter Bowman, Jeff Kane on bass, and a year later you took over from Reggie, Peter Bowman.
There's a really funny story about all of that. When I was 14, I used to take the train from Traralgon. I used to get the 6:40 a.m. V line into Flinders Street. And I used to walk around Melbourne. I used to go to Allen's, Brash's. There was a store called Davis Music. I was just hanging out in music stores because I just wanted to be around, you know, guitars. And I met a guitar player by the name of Jeff Wright. And I also met another guitar player by the name of Scott Kingman. And Jeff Wright used to play guitar with Doug Parkinson. He became quite a mentor of mine. He'd take me to rehearsals. I'd spend the weekend with him and his wife at the time. And anyway, he was very, very, very kind and generous to me. But during that little process, he said to me, you know what? There's this band called The Cutters. He said, and they've got this brilliant guitar player. His name's Phil Buckle. He goes, and you may have heard of their drummer. His name's Virgil Zanardi. Well, of course, I'd seen Virgil on the John Burroughs collection with like Linda Cable, or I'd seen him play, you know, used to come to Melbourne to see him play. And I was like, oh my God, I've got to audition. Anyway, I auditioned for this band, you know, a band, sent a tape in, went and met their manager, Peter Hoyland, and played a couple of songs for him. And I was 14 years old. Like, I was never going to get the job, but I was on their radar, or at least on Peter's radar, Peter Hoyland's radar. And Reggie ended up getting the job in that band. But Peter Hoyland said to me, he goes, if you ever come to Melbourne, like, and you ever want, my management at the time used to own the grain store, the Metro, and Inflation. You're probably familiar with those nightclubs in Melbourne.
I've fallen out of all of them.
Good man. Anyway, that was kind of the beginnings of me. And then I moved to Melbourne when I was about 16. And started playing in cover bands, and then I got a call from Virgil asking me if I wanted to be a singer in a band, a cover band, a Van Halen cover band. And I basically said to him, listen, mate, I'm not a singer. I'm no singer, but I'd love to audition for the guitar playing gig in that band. And in Virgil's sort of way, he was always a big supporter of young up-and-coming players, so he was always interested in sort of, I don't want to say sniffing out, but like he was always looking, digging for new young players that he could kind of develop. And of course, again, the rest's history. I mean, I was just, I think he had a guitar player for that gig, but anyway, I ended up getting it. And it was maybe 18 months later where our singer was sick and I just sang a song at soundcheck. And he goes, hey, come out to the car and put a cassette in. And it was The State, which is who The Cutters became once Reggie joined the band.
Yeah, okay.
And then the rest is just, you know, that. And
Southern Sons evolved from that, right?
That was how we were born. And that really, look, I loved The State. Elementary is one of my favourite records still. I just absolutely love that record. And I was so blown away that, you know, Phil would even be interested in not singing, because he's a great singer too, like he's awesome. But I just think, you know, he started writing with John. And I think he started hearing his songs go to this other place with someone that had a greater range. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you know, he heard his songs bloom in a different way. And, you know, the record company was getting a bit stale on the band. And I don't know. It's almost difficult for me to talk about that, because even though it was such a great time, I was like, what don't they get? This band is awesome. But anyway,
you're patient and you evolved into Southern Sun's got a record deal June 1, 1990. You released the debut album and self-titled Southern Sun's. Went to number five in the album charts, and also the single Heart of Danger went to number five as well. So that's a nice start for, you know, what was to become one of Australia's finest rock bands.
Yeah, look, we got really, I think it was just when a lot of preparation and opportunity met, that was our luck, that was our little window, and it was a great time. You know, it blows me away that I still get to go and sing those songs, and people, you know, as we get older, it's amazing how you get remembered by strangers and forgotten by some of the ones that you love the most.
Well, you know, Hold Me in Your Arms and all those great songs, you know, they were etched. You know, we listened to them in the car, we listened to them at home, you know, even our kids got to love it because it was on the radio when we dropped them off at school and all of that. And it's just etched in our mind, and good songs will always be good songs and will always be played.
Preach the sermon, brother, preach the sermon.
I feel a bit like that because I thought you were going to join the priesthood when you bought your church. So I... So I thought, well, I can sing in his gospel group up there.
Preach to the congregation, my man.
Yeah.
You know, I agree with you. I really do. And I struggle to not turn into one of those cranky old men who's like, you know, it's not as good now as it was when I was going up. But the reality is that there was a golden era. Mm. And some may say it was the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, 90s, whatever. But the reality is that shortly thereafter, the Suns had our day in the sun. Things changed dramatically for our business. Grunge came in. Yeah. The whole sort of music industry flipped as far as what was popular and what wasn't. And then CDs came in around that era as well, which turned music into data. And once that happened, there was no turning back.
Let's get back to Southern Sons. The first release, Southern Sons, and then you put out Nothing But the Truth, and then the third and final one was Zone. And you only had 5 years full blast at Southern Sons, but what an impact that band had. And the impact is now you're touring with Southern Sons after 25 years. I think it's marvellous.
We're back doing it again, and I've never enjoyed it as much, to be honest with you. I mean, Virgil isn't doing this tour because he's just outside of Rome in Italy somewhere. We have Pete Drummond, who is the only drummer that Virgil sanctions to do this gig. And, you know, the whole idea of going out and celebrating this music again is, you know, we're not reinventing it. You know, we're not trying to do the sort of, you know, the reinvented, reimagined version of Southern Sons. We're really trying to keep it faithful and, you know, to how it sounded then. And I love that because music is nostalgic for me, and I'm even having that experience.
And on March the 9th, you're going back to your old hometown, Traralgon.
How crazy is that? I know. I've got my old guitar teacher going, my mum's going, and a bunch of our, you know, a bunch of friends and family will be at those gigs. I'm very excited about that, mate.
Yeah, no, you got Horsham, February 16, and then the Palms, Saturday, February 17. 23rd of February, you're at the Wedge, and then the 24th in Frankston. March 9, of course, you're in Traralgon. And you're also doing... Are you doing the one with Virgil on the 8th of March at Bird's Basement?
I don't know yet because I may have a solo gig that night. Right. So I'm just...
it's good to be working.
It really is because we had a little bit of a spell there. So it's nice to be back on the tools again.
Yeah.
You know, between the Fabulous Caprettos, my solo stuff, and the Sun stuff and a few little sort of homage to like the Beatles and Pink Floyd that I do very occasionally, it really is nice to be our playing again. It really, really, really is.
Yeah, well, you're doing shows all over Australia. Irwin Thomas, Jack Jones, Southern Sun shows, as you said. You're enjoying it better now the second time around, of course. Now, what have you learnt over your musical journey?
That it's good to be underestimated.
Oh, that's interesting. Yes.
Well, it takes pressure off you if you're underestimated. But really, I guess really what I've learned, I mean, that's a bit of a smart-ass answer, but I think what I've really learned is just how to be more comfortable in my own skin.
Yeah.
And to just enjoy what you're doing with the people that you're doing it with. Mm. I know it sounds cliche again, you know, be grateful, be thankful. I'm so blessed. But I am. Like, I'm really, really, really lucky. Like, I'm so lucky. And I get to work with my peers. I get to have this experience with people that I grew up adoring and idolizing. And I get to be either in bands with them or play on their records or produce records for them or whatever it is, mm. write songs with them. And, you know, I think there was a big portion of my career where I didn't get to enjoy it a lot because I was so anxious all the time. I was so scared that I wouldn't have a voice. I was so afraid of, you know, not living up to people's expectations.
Well, Irwin, we were all trying to make it back then. And
that's
your focus,
right.
Your focus comes away from enjoying the experience to, I don't want to stuff up, you know?
Yeah, that's right. And I just always was so hypercritical of myself. And I just couldn't. And you know what, man? I didn't know how to just be. I look at old interviews that I did and I'm like just laughing all the time and I'm just trying to like me.
Yeah.
And I just want to go back and just give that guy a hug and say, you know what, mate, just relax. Everything's going to be okay. You're going to be all right. You're going to have highs. You're going to have lows. You're going to love. You're going to lose. You're going to love again. Life is an amazing experience. Don't miss it. Don't lose the gold and all of that, you know?
You've just explained the fabulous Caprettos.
Yeah.
Because I think you feel really comfortable with those other wonderful singers and musicians because they're in the same level as you are in life. You've had the struggle, you've had the hits, and now you just want to get out there and enjoy yourself.
That's exactly right. You have the hits, you have the knocks. And, you know, no one can really prepare you for what's coming. You don't know, and you don't know how your life's going to look. But what you do, don't be so anxious and enjoy yourself and communicate with people and, you know, put yourself out there and invite them in to participate in the experience and to have a good time because really that's why we started doing all this.
Now, does Jack Jones, a.k.a. Irwin Thomas, have any hobbies apart from songwriting and music?
Well, I've become a bit of a renovator, although I wouldn't say that I've done, you know,
You've renovated a church. What are you talking about? Of course you are.
I had a lot of help. I had a lot of help and I couldn't have done it on my own.
Right.
But I did enjoy, even though, look, there were months on end where you know, you feel like you're just working every day. And look, it kept me sane during our little time off as well. So there was a lot of really great things that hobby-wise. I used to like fishing. I haven't been fishing for a really, really, really long time.
Right.
But that was always something that I used to really enjoy. There was a peace and a kind of serenity on just sitting on a bank. It didn't really matter if you caught anything or not. There was just something sort of meditative about that.
Oh, the serenity. Hey, what's your favourite food?
I do love Japanese as a cuisine.
Yeah.
I ate a lot of it when I was in New York.
Yeah.
It's a toss up between that and like barbecue, as in like steak, because I'm a pretty big, heavy meat eater. So, I mean, I love a great pasta, but it just goes straight to my waist, so it's hard. You know.
I know all about that, my friend.
I don't have the metabolism to. I used to, but I don't have it anymore. So I've got to be a bit more responsible with how I carb load these days.
Yeah. Name three dinner guests, dead or alive.
Oh man, wow, that's a tough one. I would like to have dinner with David Bowie. I'm going to say Donald Trump. That might be a bit controversial, but I find him a fascinating character. It may not be the most popular, but I do find him fascinating. There are so many, but Sir George Martin would be another one, obviously. I mean, you could start going John Lennon, Paul McCartney, all these songs. songwriters. And of course, there's an interest in all of that as well. But there's a lot of conversations to be had with those three, I'd say.
Last question, Erwin Thomas, a.k.a. Jack Jones from Southern Sons, who we all love and adore. What's the best show that you've ever done?
Well, and there's so many different factors. Like, I remember playing at the New Bergerink Festival with John. There was maybe 100,000 people there. It was phenomenal. And they were all singing. They knew You're the Voice. They knew Help. It was just incredible. But then again, I played guitar at a friend of mine's barbecue with Mike Landau, who's one of my absolute heroes. And I remember just looking over at him and him looking at me smiling, nodding his head, and me thinking, this is the greatest day of my life. Yeah. Like, this is the greatest. This does not. And again, like, when it comes back to, you know, what advice would you give people or whatever? If you were a person now trying to be an influencer, well, that's a no-brainer, the answer to that question. Mm. It's the one where the most people were cheering for you. But personally, I was out buying Amy Grant records because Mike Landau was on them, playing on one song, two songs. Like, as a kid growing up, buying records just to listen to that guy play guitar. I mean, he was who I wanted to be when I grew up, you know, when I became a professional musician. To have that acknowledgement from him in that environment was just, it really didn't get any better for me in anything that I've ever done. I guess that's the kind of extreme of our experience as artists, but really they're the two. That's pretty much as, I mean, it's pretty wonderful when you hear people singing Heart in Danger or Hold Me in Your Arms and stuff after all these years. And I think, wow, isn't it amazing that these people still, you know, connect with these songs? And that's not something that I take for granted ever. But I guess as big highlights, you know, they were pretty, you know, with there was like Hot House Flowers, but Kodo, that was where I met Steve Lukather for the first time, and Jeff Beccaro, and, you know, Bob Bradshaw. Those guys were such a huge part of me growing up. They were my idols.
Your heroes, there's nothing better.
Yeah, so I guess that was a big part of what shaped those shows as well. But yeah, I'd say those two.
Jack, it has been an absolute pleasure and a privilege to be talking to you, and I really, really appreciate your time, buddy.
Buddy, thank you for having me, and let's go fishing. Let's all of us go fishing one weekend. Let's do it. We'll sit on a bank somewhere. I'm not great on a boat. I'll go on a boat.
We'll find a beach somewhere.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm up for it.
All right, Jack. Love you, mate.
Love you too, buddy. Thanks so much.
This podcast brought to you thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives every day of the year.